I was converted in 1988, which coincided with the kind of push in schools to have more multi-faith morning assemblies, multi-faith services, though the law at that time said it had to be broadly or mainly of a Christian nature or something like that. But I remember reading in the newspaper about that time as a young Christian, somebody with a bit of sense and tongue-in-cheek too, was talking about an airport that had just had its first multi-faith chapel installed, maybe in Heathrow, I can't remember. And this is what the person wrote in the newspaper. So nervous passengers can now have a word with their own particular Almighty. I hope you understand the power of that. I saw a man last week on TV, and this is what he said. He'd arrived at a particular airport, Atlanta, I think, in America, and he said, it's very interesting, he said, because there was a multi-faith chapel on one side and a life-size model of a dinosaur on the other. And then this is what he said. I thought this is going to be very confusing for religious people. You've got faith on one side and reason on the other. Now, I don't like that, even though I used to talk that nonsense myself. I used to say the Bible is rubbish and I had no arguments. I just used to use these kind of throwaway lines. But I thought what that man needs to realize is that he doesn't understand faith, for a start, because both need faith, both views. Either faith in the God of the Bible or faith in the fact that the universe somehow occurred without a cause. But that man obviously does not see that both need a kind of faith. Professor Anthony Flew was an atheist for many years and then abandoned his atheism in his latter years, saying that he'd followed the evidence and concluded there must be a God. And I heard 2 weeks ago, I think Ian Hislop interviewed from, you know, he's a private eye editor and a comedian, isn't he? And he was saying that, you know, he believed there was a God. He wasn't very strident, he said, but he couldn't see that there could be anything other than the existence of a God. But Anthony Flew, of course, was hounded then by fellow academics for concluding that there must be a God. And this is the kind of argument that Anthony Flew used to use. Here's Norma and Marilyn. They're hacking their way with machetes through the jungle for hours and hours, and suddenly they come to a clearing, not just a clearing, it's got a perfectly rectangular lawn with flower beds, with beautiful flowers in, not a weed in sight. The lawn, the grass is lovely and short and is as flat as a billiard table. And Marilyn says, well, there must be a gardener. Look at this, how beautiful it is. Norma says, no way. And Marilyn says, there must be a gardener. You could not have this by chance. But Norma says, have you seen a gardener? No, says Marilyn. There we are then. There is no gardener. And so the argument goes on, you see. Both say, no way. Marilyn says, no way this could happen by chance. Norma says, no way could you have a gardener because you haven't seen him. And, you know, if you haven't got a scientific background or you don't think kind of rationally, easily, logically, if you like, then we have to realize you cannot have, no scientist would, sane scientist would accept that you can have an effect without a cause. No science that I've ever come across says, oh, things just happen. There is no reason, there is no cause, they just happen. I mean, scientists believe in the existence of electricity and gravity, even though neither can be seen, but they acknowledge their existence. And the point is that when push comes to shove, even atheistic scientists will admit that there's a gardener, if you like, or there's a cause. Now, Hebrews 11, the great verse that was in Sarah's presentation earlier, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And in John 1, through him, the Lord Jesus Christ, the Word, the Christ, through him, all things were created. And without him, nothing was made that was made. So whatever was created, Jesus did it. Now, again, I read an atheist a while ago saying, the universe always had the possibility of creating itself. Now, again, in the cold light of day, You cannot say that with a straight face. You cannot. No philosophy professor or legitimate scientist would say that. Because if the universe had the capacity always to create itself, it would mean that the universe had to exist before it existed. It had to exist before it could create itself and bring itself into existence. And that's not reasonable, is it? That's madness, isn't it? So if there was ever nothing, I mean absolutely nothing, what would there be now? There would have to be nothing. If there ever was nothing, there would have to be nothing now. Because, as I used to say when I was a young science teacher, there's no such thing as a free lunch. In other words, somebody paid for it. Somebody's responsible. You might go on a course somewhere in education and lunch is provided, but somebody's responsible for it. And so, relating to science, what that meant was somebody, something, if you like, has been the cause of this effect. So we're back to John 1. Everything we can weigh and sniff and measure was made, created, and made by the only one who was not created, by the one who has life in himself. It says in John 1, in him, that's Jesus Christ, Lord of glory, in him was life. And therefore, on that basis, Hebrew 11 can say that faith is not wish fulfillment, it's not wish projection, it's not hoping for the best, it's not thinking pleasant thoughts. Faith is simply trusting the only one who can be absolutely trusted. We can't be trusted, can we? I can't be trusted, you can't be trusted, not absolutely, but faith is trusting the only one who can be trusted perfectly, the Lord Jesus Christ. And since he never changes, he can always be trusted because he keeps his promises, and therefore faith is being sure. Not because I work myself up into some frenzy or lather, but sure and certain on the basis of who I'm trusting, because he never lets anybody down, he never changes. Now, if you follow that, that's just amazing. That is just tremendous. It's reasonable, it's logical, it makes sense. But as we remind ourselves time after time, common sense is not very common, is it? We are not always reasonable people. We don't always follow the logical argument. And so if you're a Christian, you find that you're swimming against the tide, that there are people who are very able and they're talking all sorts of nonsense, because faith, as far as they're concerned, is pie in the sky, thinking something that definitely isn't true. They don't follow a reasonable argument. And Jesus came across this all the time. I just read in Luke 6 yesterday, I think it was, where he asks the religious people, they don't like the fact that he's healing somebody on a Sabbath. And he asks them, what's the right thing to do then? What's lawful then? And we read, of course, because they can't answer him, because his arguments are totally logical, they are furious with him. Instead of giving in and saying, you know, he's got a point, he's right. They don't, because they're biased, like we are by nature. And they are angry with him, and they start to say, we've got to get rid of this Jesus fellow. You know, in 1984, those of us who were alive will remember the Band-Aid. There was this news item, Michael Burke showing the famine in Ethiopia. We'd seen news reels of famines before in Biafra and all sorts of things. But this was brilliantly, powerfully put together. And the haunting music in the background is a great song by the Cars, Who's Gonna Drive You Home Tonight? And of course it was haunting because nobody was gonna take these kids and these mothers anywhere. There was a mother sobbing, holding a kid with pencil, skinny arms and a huge bloated belly full of wind because they hadn't had any food for ages. And of course, it stirred people, and Bob Geldof and Midge Ewart came along and they did this big concert to raise money. But the thing was this, the Ethiopian government knew there was a famine coming. It had been long predicted. Are they prepared? Not at all. And then all the millions that was raised, lots of it never got anywhere near Ethiopia, never got anywhere near the people who were in need. because rogues came in, people who were selfish. They even got the cans of skimmed milk, skimmed baby milk, and refilled them with chalk. Now, who would do that? Well, people who are selfish. You understand that, don't you? You understand it because you know that you are pretty selfish when push comes to shove as well. I watched a fellow called Simon Reeve. He's a journalist, never heard of him before. He did a programme looking at corrupt regimes around the world. And he came up with this astonishing figure that he could name over 500 journalists who've stood in their country, stood up and said that there was corruption in the government. Over 500, he said, in the last decade, have been murdered. Why murdered? For standing up and telling people what's true. The government didn't like the world being told that they were corrupt. See, what is undisputed, surely, is that the Bible is absolutely spot on when it says something is seriously wrong with us, with you, with me, with us. Proverbs 20, who can say if they kept their heart pure and free from sin? Answer, no one, nobody. Faith is reasonable. There was an atheist who wrote some time ago, everything is meaningless. Well, again, if you want me to think seriously about that, you have to realize that that is a stupid thing to say. Because if everything's meaningless, then the thing you just said is also meaningless, and therefore you're making no point at all. I came across this story just a few days ago. A lady in Warsaw, Poland, in 1939, her name was Irena Sendlerova. And the Nazis invaded, they built this huge wall, and they shoved all the Jews in the ghetto, the other side of the wall, with the guards, and Irena had a pretty good idea what would happen to the Jews. So she managed to get in every day. She had a truck, she went in as a bit of a nurse, a bit of a plumber, she'd clean out the sewers, she was a general dog's body. She went in, she didn't charge, and of course they let her in, because the guards, he was saving them any unpleasant work, and she had big dogs in the back of the truck, and she trained the dogs to bark any time there was a soldier anywhere near. But what she did was she smuggled out infants in the bottom of her toolbox, and she smuggled out slightly older children in sacks. And by the end, of 1943, she had smuggled out, with help, over 2,000 kids. Over 2,000. They got her, the Nazis. They tried to get the names of them out of her, and she refused, and they broke her arms and her legs, and they actually sentenced her to death, but somebody managed to bribe the guard, and she managed to escape. The point is, 60 years later, that was finishing in 1943, 60 years later, eventually this kind of information filtered out. She hadn't made a big song and dance about it. She was still alive. She was in her 90s, actually. And eventually then, when all the facts were put together, they thought, well, this is amazing. This woman needs to be recognized. So they nominated her for the Nobel Peace Prize. She didn't win. The Vice President of the United States, Al Gore, won. And then a couple of years later, when she could have won again, it was Barack Obama. Why? Because the world's not really interested. The world is selfish. The world is not really interested. Even though this woman was a heroine, the world really doesn't care much and would prefer to pat Al Gore and Barack Obama on the back. There's a saying, isn't there, on some of the adverts on TV sometimes, millions of people can't be wrong. Well, they can be wrong. They can, and they are. See, this is nothing new in 2 Corinthians 4. Paul says, the God of this age, that's the devil, the God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so they cannot see the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ. They can't see, and they don't want to see. They won't see, but they can't. This is nothing new. Richard Baxter, preacher in the 17th century, said, we try to stir their consciences, they feel nothing. We try to be logical, they refuse to think and drown themselves in oceans of pleasure. That could have been written yesterday, couldn't it? Right up to date. Yet here you are, still breathing. Why? He loves you. He's had mercy on you. Why are you still here? while you're still listening to this message. He wants you to think. He wants you to think. He wants you to see plainly. Many are scared to think. They have a sneaky suspicion that if they think too much, they're going to find out that something is unpleasant. See, the thing is, Christianity is entirely reasonable. It makes sense. It's not faith versus reason. No, faith is reasonable. And then some people think, but if I think too much, and if Christianity, the evidence is compelling, I'll have to take a chance and a leap of faith. I'll have to jump into the abyss and hope Jesus will catch me. But it's not like that, because the evidence is compelling, it's overwhelming. And I'll be honest, though, until you trust Jesus, you can't know for sure. You can't know for sure. Hebrews 11, you can be sure. He's talking about Christians now. They have entrusted Jesus, and you get to know him, you can get absolute assurance. But until then, you have to reach out, and that reaching out and calling upon him is called faith. It's taste and see that the Lord is good. But bear in mind, there is no other safe option other than trusting Jesus. You know, some of the stuff that people read and say at funerals, no, don't cry, he's only in the next room, even though you'll never see him again. You know, and recently, about a lady who passed away, and not an old lady either, she's addressed now and saying, you've earned your sleep. You know, when that was read, I don't know, I can't describe my emotions really. It's heartbreaking, it's gut-wrenching, but it makes me angry. Because you're reading this, you're a minister of the gospel, so-called, you're reading this, the people are listening, they're not thinking, obviously, about what you're saying, because if any of them were thinking, they'd be saying, hang on, if she's just asleep, why are these people hugging each other? And because otherwise they're going to collapse. If she's just gone to sleep, why is that man weeping in the street? You're guessing about something that's absolutely ridiculous. It's awful, man, because the gospel is simple. Do we need to make rubbish up about, don't worry, she's just asleep. She's not just asleep, she's dead. And chances are you'll never see her again. You know, in the Battle of Trafalgar, the French admiral wanted to surrender. So he came aboard Nelson's ship and he said from a distance, can I approach you, Lord Nelson, and surrender? And Nelson said to him, right, put your weapons down first. Then you can approach me. And so he had to take his belt off with his sword and his dagger and everything and lay them down. And if you want to get to heaven, you've got to stop fighting. You've got to put your weapons down. Some of you, what else are you waiting for? Why are you fighting God all the time? The evidence is overwhelming. What are the alternatives? Turn and trust him. Stop fighting him. Turn and trust him. He's a wonderful God. He will receive you if you come. But if you don't come, you've only got yourself to blame. Amen.